big show for you all today as we preview week three. Andy Behrens joins to talk through the three matchups that deserve your attention and the three burning fantasy questions he wants answered. We talk Chiefs running backs. We talk Bills pass catchers. What more could you possibly want in your life? Oh, I know, Tara Roberts to join the show in the second half to talk through some volatile players you might be considering starting this week and whether they will make or break you. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Friday, September 20th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is one truly hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is my good friend, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
It is a hell of a day to talk ball. Everybody's hurt. We're gonna try to deliver a Bears-free podcast, at least on my end. I'm excited about that. So things are good. That was that week two was something, man.
Week two was something. It tested our off-season priors, our week one beliefs, and it obviously tested the fortitude of fantasy managers everywhere with all of those injuries. So, it's funny. Well, you know, when we get to the second half of the show with Tara Roberts, because that's how this preview show goes, Andy provides three burning fantasy questions and three matchups that he believes deserves your attention. And then in the second half, like I mentioned, Tara is going to join me to identify sort of the make or break players for this week. We also give you our keys to winning players like we do each week. And my reason for saying all this, Andy, is that when I was looking over the outline for the second half of the show and, you know, picking my key to winning player, I'm kind of like, man, are we already at this point of the season where we're considering this player, or we're talking about this guy, and yes, we are somehow already at that portion of the season.
Yeah. So, I mean, I got a lineup this week that I actually feel okay about that is probably going to have like Juwan Jennings and Cam Akers in it. And like, it's just a total rogues gallery, but I think it's better than my opponents, who also has a terrible injury situation. I think I just beat him to a bunch of guys. So I'm already playing lineups that feel like it's, you know, a 16 team league and six teams are on bye, but no, this is like a 12 team league and it's week three.
Anytime you're doing fantasy analysis, if you're doing it right, you should always consider, is this real? Like, would I really play this player, or am I recommending this just on the off chance it looks good? You know, am I recommending this on the off chance? Like, I can see the matchups working out, or this, that, and the other. And nope, there are real situations where, Juwan Jennings, I got him off the waiver. I'm like, thank God.
I was so happy. I was so happy to get Juwan Jennings. Yeah.
It got late pretty early here in the 2024 NFL season, as Andy Behrens likes to say. All right, let's waste no more time. Let's get into the three burning fantasy questions that Andy wants answered this week. Give me your first one, Andy Behrens.
Yeah, my first one, and I'm sure you've already talked this to death, right? And I know that you had a good conversation with Nate Tice about it as well. But how the Chiefs replace Isaiah Pacheco is a big flaming deal in fantasy. This is where all the fab went this week, right? I'm more in on Carson Steele than I thought I'd be. Placed some pretty aggressive bids. Have him, I got him in a lot of lineups, an unfortunate number of lineups. Is he good? I don't know. He's kind of a bumper car, right? He's one of those guys that is stylistically kind of fun to watch because he just looks for the next guy to hit. And it's working for him so far. And the Chiefs were trusting him to at least have a rotational role while Pacheco was, you know, fully healthy and operational. So I assume he's going to, you know, I don't think anybody's going to step into exactly what Isaiah Pacheco was doing, but I think the guy who's going to get the most carries is Steele. I'm open to the idea that Kareem Hunt's problems last year were mostly related to an injury that he was playing through. But if that's not true, then he was pretty well cooked last season. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of at that point in a career, right? 29 years old, where if you're coming off a really inefficient season, it probably means something. So I don't think there's other good answers on the roster right now. Like, I don't think Samaje Perine is just a skeleton key for, you know, explosive scoring. I don't think he's Jerick McKinnon. I don't think he's Damian Williams of years ago. So I think steel is probably the best answer here, but it's complicated. And we need Andy Reid to answer this for us.
It's extremely complicated. And not to kind of continue the theme of fantasy analysis here, right? But this is one of those situations where, as an analyst of the game, we are not going to know the answer to this question until we see this play out. I know that's super unfortunate.
People hate that. Yeah.
People hate that. But like, look, I mean, great example of this is, I think there was a, I saw Josh Norris share this. It was a clip from the locker room where they're talking about Carson Steele, or they're talking to Carson Steele, the reporters are. And he basically said, yeah, Andy said that we're going to split this thing up. That's the Andy Reid, not Andy Behrens, just to be clear for the people at home. You did not tell Carson Steele what his workload is going to be, although I wish you would. That'd be great. If you would.
No, really, I've been pep talking him. I would never say anything like that. I'm like, hey, big guy, get ready for 30.
Yeah, get ready for 30, pal. That talk about a skeleton key. That would be great. But Andy Reid basically said they're going to split this thing up. Yeah, that's the plan going into it. But what if Carson Steele just looks great? And they just continue to feed him, and they continue to feed him. What if he doesn't look so great? And it's like, well, we are going to have to kind of make Samaje Perine more a part of this. And I didn't have a bullish take on Carson Steele until Nate definitely talked me into it on the mm-hmm. Fantasy Film Room this week. And like, that's I just don't look again. There's a lot of ways this can play out. There's also the chance, Andy, that they just throw the ball more without Isaiah Pacheco. That's quite possible, but I guess when I start to consider that option, I hear myself from a few shows ago thinking, I don't know about this Chiefs offense. And I have a lot of questions about their passing game overall right now, you know, because I'm not sure Xavier Worthy's ready to be a high volume player. They definitely don't have a good pass protection plan at the left tackle spot at this point after what we saw against Cincinnati. So I don't know, man. I'm there again, a lot of ways that this can go. I don't really have conviction one way or another, but we'll certainly, when we get back together on the recap show, have a lot more answers.
Yeah. The one place where I'm fairly sure Carson Steele is going to be the guy, as long as, you know, ball security doesn't become an issue, anything like that, is the goal line and short yardage situations, because he's just a banger and loves to do it too, right? Like to a fault, I think. He seems to seek out contact in a way that most traditional running back would not. But I think it's an incredible goal line profile. And if this offense can get back to, they don't have to be like a 35 point a game offense, but if they can simply be one of the 5 to 8 best offenses in the league, that's a lot of goal line opportunities. And that's, that's something. I don't know that they're going to throw to Carson Steele a lot. That's probably the domain of Samaje Perine. But man, if he just gets goal line opportunities, huge deal.
Huge deal. I think the moral of the story here is, if you have to start a Chiefs running back, I guess both Andy and I think it would be Carson Steele is your best option. Hope you don't have to do that. It's a reasonably decent matchup against the Falcons too. So I don't
feel all in on Carson Steele, but if you looked at my lineups, you'd be like, oh my God, Andy is all in on Carson Steele. He's he's never loved a player more. Did he go to Iowa?
Like I said, it got pretty early or got pretty late pretty early here in the 2024 NFL season. Let's move on to another offense that's very highly thought of, the Buffalo Bills. Andy, what are we thinking about this week with the Bills?
Yeah, listen, I promise I'm going to stop talking about this, but it is but I have to for at least one more week. And my burning question here is, is this the week that Josh Allen actually throws the ball? This is driving me crazy. He's at 21 pass attempts per game. Whatever. It's 2 weeks. This probably changes. I'm sure there's a 40 pass attempt game out there. I just don't know that it's going to, I don't know that it's going to be week three. I don't know that they're going to need to do it. And I feel like what they gave us last week was maybe their ideal game script. Like, if everything could go that way, that's their dream scenario for all games moving forward. And I don't know that Jacksonville, especially on the road, coming off a sort of jarringly bad game, I thought, for Trevor Lawrence. I don't think they can hang with Buffalo, and I think we're going to get another low volume game here. So, like, again, we're 2 weeks in. He's thrown like 42 passes. The team leader in targets has 8. Nobody's got 100 yards. It's bleak. This is the scenario that I did not think we would have, but we talked about it after week one, you know, we actually have a scenario where Josh Allen can be a top three, top one fantasy quarterback, and none of these receivers are relevant. Like the volume isn't even close to where it needs to be for Dalton Kincaid to make any noise. And he's been part of the sort of minefield at tight end so far this year. And I just don't see how that gets better anytime soon. I would love to be surprised this week, and I would love to see them put the ball in the air 35 times. I just don't think it's coming. Like the Jaguars were just such a sad display from them last week. Good defense and all that, but such a sad display from them last week that I just don't think they're going to force Buffalo to throw.
Yeah, I don't think the Jaguars are a good team right now. They do play a lot of man coverage, 63.3% man coverage rate according to Fantasy Points data, which is usually good for a mobile quarterback. So I bet we see more Josh Allen fantasy points this week simply because there's going to be more rushing from his side of things. Obviously, what we got in Thursday night last week is not a real game script, you know, and that's been a big part of the pushback to people pushing back on me about Dalton Kincaid and being concerned and, you know, kind of having him as a total panic player in the panic meter, which I don't know if I have Kincaid on one roster and I'm not feeling great about it. So whether you want to say total panic, whatever, that's too much in week two, fine. But I don't think you're getting what you bargained for at this point. And I'm not sure when that's coming back. Like, that's the thing for me, Andy, is this offense is successful right now doing it this way. They have told you from the end of last season that this is how they want to play. They want to be a physical run team. It's so in line with what works right now against defense. You know, we're having these big picture conversations on social media and on, I mean, shoot, TV networks and stuff like that. You got Mel Kiper out here saying we need to ban the too high defense. But, you know, I love, look, Mel's a legend. I respect the hell out of Mel Kiper, but I don't think so. We're not banning the too high defense.
Yeah, that's
but
not coming.
Again, yeah, that's probably not going to happen. I love Daniel Jeremiah. You know, people know, listen to the show know he's a good personal, he's a good close personal friend. He's talking about, like, let's change the hash marks in the NFL. TJ, come back to us, please. Like, my God, not the hash marks for all. Please. No. We're talking about all these, like, how do we change the rules to get scoring back up? Well, teams like the Bills are showing you that there is a way to counterpunch this stuff, and it's running the football, it's being physical.
Yeah.
And I just don't know. Maybe this ages poorly. And of course, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, is Josh Allen. They could throw the ball 30 times a game to be totally fine. They will at some point this year, right? That game is coming. But how many times is it going to happen this year? That's the big question here.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I think you're going to have to force them to do it. I just don't think it's ever going to be like, you know, I don't think they're ever going to go into a week and say, you know what, we need to put the ball in the air 40 times. And we need to do it opening drive, second drive, like first quarter, we're coming out there chucking. It just doesn't feel like that's their identity. And you're right, that was not their identity in the most important weeks last season. And it is not what they have carried into this season. It seemed to surprise the hell out of the Dolphins, who were sure not ready for it. And then the game was over, right? Like, they stomped all over them and ran through them. And then the game was effectively over really early. And I think Buffalo would like that exact same game script. So I'm, you know, that same ragtag lineup that I was mentioning with, like, Carson Steele and Cam Akers and Juwan Jennings, I've got, like, Khalil Shakir in that too. And he's Buffalo's leading receiver right now. And he's probably the part of that lineup that I feel worst about.
And I feel like Shakir is a great player. I know that Curtis Samuel is going to get more involved as the year goes on. I think Keon Coleman makes so much sense as their vertical dunk on you option when they get a single high look. But these guys are all sort of parts of the machine, not features of the machine. Like, there again, I'm looking at the Bills schedule right now. I don't think it's this week against Jacksonville, but maybe week four in Baltimore, maybe week five in Houston, maybe certainly week 11 against the Chiefs, and, you know, week 13, ironically, they got a bye between these two games, week 13 against the 49ers, week 15 against the Lions in Detroit. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and pencil Josh Allen in for, you know, 30 plus attempts in week 15 in Detroit.
Yeah.
Okay. But the games around there, against the Rams and the Patriots and the Jets in the fantasy playoffs, by the way, not to get you, you're already freaking out about week three. Hey, let me freak you out a little bit further down the line when you make the fantasy playoffs, because you're going to make the fantasy playoffs because you guys are good at this. We're going to be talking about the Bills throwing, you know, 20 passes a game in the fantasy playoffs. Like, yeah, that's the reality, I think, of where this team is right now. Again, maybe this ages poorly, whatever, but I'm with you, Andy, that I don't think we're going to see that this week against the Jaguars, because my faith in the Jaguars is dwindling by the second. Okay. let's move on to your next question here, Andy Behrens, which has to do with those Miami Dolphins you just mentioned.
Yeah, this is a huge one for a lot of us. And it's just simply how bad does it get for Tyreek and for Jalen Waddle without Tua at the controls of that offense? And then if it's terrible, and it's probably going to be, it could be terrible for a couple of weeks here. How quickly do we get to Tyler Huntley? And then is that even a solution? Because I feel like Huntley himself is kind of fun fantasy wise, potentially. But as somebody to like feed your receivers, I don't know. I don't know if it's that much better. I do know that Thompson has been mostly a mess. Like, what did he acquit himself reasonably well in the postseason one time? Sure. Other than that, it hasn't been great. He's completed fewer than 60% of his career attempts. He's at just 5.2 yards per attempt for his career. I will say, weirdly, the actual like Tyreek splits with Thompson have not been terrible. Obviously, we're talking about a clever offensive design here and good coaching. And so, do I trust them to put Tyreek Hill in positions to impact the game? Sure, of course. We can line him up in the backfield. We can give him jet sweeps. We can hit him on quick screens with some noise in front of him and see what he can do. Like, but you know, can they hit on timing stuff downfield with Thompson? I doubt it, and that is a huge concern.
It's a huge concern in this matchup too, particularly against the Seahawks, because obviously we know Mike McDonald's history as the Ravens defensive coordinator. They will throw anything at you. They will change the picture consistently from a coverage perspective. I think I've been impressed. I don't know about you, Andy, but I've been impressed what I've seen out of Seattle so far from the defensive side of things. And look, yeah, it's against the Patriots. I understand that last week, but I keep coming back to Hunter Henry was just thumping them early in that game. And then they just, we're going to just stop that. And then everything's, you know, stopped. It's the Patriots. Obviously the Dolphins have much more dangerous wide receivers than the New England Patriots. But at the same time, this is an offense that I think is going to be totally in exploratory mode of what we are doing here. So I just feel like there's a chance this could get ugly quickly for Miami. And in that reason, yeah, it's like, when are we going to see Tyler Huntley? And, you know, is there a chance that Sal and I talked about this on the Data Dump show? I think right now I feel best about Devon Achane being the guy to survive this quarterback conundrum here in Miami. But even then, does that become something that runs out of gas, especially from the pass catching perspective, or is Skylar Thompson going to be so quick to dump it down? I actually think that's, you know, I really haven't even considered the whole Tyler Huntley part of this yet, Andy, but if/when Tyler Huntley gets involved here, does the Achane receiving role go down because he's a scrambling quarterback and they're typically not dumping it off to running backs?
Yeah. And in any of those scenarios, like, I don't think it's good for anyone. Like, just because we're saying, hey, maybe Achane can survive this, that doesn't mean it's a positive, right? Because this offense just doesn't, simply week to week, is not going to have anything close to the ceiling that it would have with a healthy Tua Tagovailoa. So that's just a huge disappointment. I would agree that I feel like Achane and Hill are the two players where we're probably going to try to build as much of this as we can out of those two guys and see where it takes us. But it's just going to change the shape of Tyreek's touches. And like everything with Tyreek Hill and with Achane is a potentially high yield touch, right? Like everything feels like a red zone opportunity because they can take anything to the house. They're great players, crazy fast. But it's, you know, if we're giving it to you at the line of scrimmage versus giving it to you 15 yards downfield, that's a huge deal. And I don't think Thompson can get the ball there.
Let's just quickly talk through Jalen Waddle, because I think he's the guy that most people will have questions about listening to this show. You know, Tyreek Hill was probably your first round pick. You're going to play Tyreek Hill. Devon Achane was probably your second or third round pick. What a steal if you got him in the third round. You're probably playing him. Waddle's the guy that I think people have the most questions about, both season long and right now this week. I'm just going to throw out some players, Andy, that you have ranked ahead of Jalen Waddle who have not produced this season. You've got DJ Moore. I know we said no Bears talk, but you do have DJ Moore in a good matchup against the Colts. You've got him at wide receiver 23. You've got George Pickens, who I think is having a great season, but has had plays called back. And, you know, it just makes the Steelers offense. You've got him ranked ahead. You have Tank Dell, who had negative receiving yards last week. And you have Michael Pittman, who is rapidly approaching like one of the worst picks you could have made in fantasy at ADP this year so far from a results perspective. And then you finally get to Jalen Waddle at wide receiver 27. So just kind of talk me through your thought process with Waddle if you have him on any teams.
Yeah, it's funny. Sometimes when you do ranks, you just put a whole like I'll put a collection of injured players, next to each other. And sometimes you'll just take a whole bunch of guys where you're like, oh, this is so dismal, but they're such brand name players, and you just collect them all together. I feel like that's kind of what I did there, right? Like I'm not feeling great about any of those
row
names.
Here between wide receiver 23 to 26.
Yeah, but you do hit like a certain tier of player where you're like, man, this guy's great. They are facing a lot of headwinds, and would I put them in a DFS lineup? No. Would I, do I have any particular optimism for them this week? No. But at some point, man, DJ Moore's playing really well. This is not all on him. And so you just, you try to, it's at some point you just have to say, well, this guy's too good for me to start. I don't even know what random over. I'm not going to start DeMarcus Robinson over him, right? Like, this guy is just way too good. And Waddle's in that group, but I don't like, he's also like a secondary option for Miami. And I do not think that a Skylar Thompson led offense is really going to trickle down to anybody other than Hill and Achan. Like, I think it is pretty bleak for anybody beyond those two. I just don't like, man, if they can just find a way to 21 points, that's kind of miraculous. 21, 24 points, that would be a huge achievement. And I don't know, I'll be surprised if there's a lot there for Waddle. I just don't see many scraps for him. Not that I see many scraps for those other guys either. I will say I have been very impressed with the way that George Pickens has played. And to your point, I think we talked about it like on Sunday. He's had some huge plays called back. He's had like a touchdown called back. He had that one of the great completions of the year. One of the probably the best thing that Justin Fields and George Pickens have collaborated on this year was an amazing play that was called back by, I think it was a holding penalty. He's had some really nice moments that have come back, and I think he's playing very well.
Yeah. To your point about these players that are just too good. I got longtime listeners to the pod will know what I'm talking about here. Got a question from one of the members of the Treviso Babes, Andy, about this week. Like, do I play DJ Moore? Or do I play Alec Pierce? I'm like, we're going back to DJ Moore 1 week, ma'am. I'm sorry about it, but we got to do this thing. So that's like the tough. You're at that point of the year when the box score results say one thing. What we know, I always bring up Adam Harstead's analysis from Football Guys that in the first, like, once we get to week four, ADP is still more predictive than like the first 4 weeks of the season. Up until we get to that week four point, then it becomes kind of like this is the new reality. So like, let's talk about those disappointing players when we get to that point. My final thing here, just to say on the Jalen Waddle stuff, another shout out to a member of Football Guys, Sigmund Bloom, always talks like when we've given like start sit advice, like, hey, you want to play this guy ahead of the other guy? I wouldn't talk you out of it. And I love to say that, like, hey, because I want you people out there to make the decision. Don't just take what I say and do it. That's nonsense. Not what we're doing here on this podcast. But like this group of players you have after Jalen Waddle, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, like Rashid Shaheed. I'm not talking you out of it if you want to play those dudes that Andy has ranked lower than Jalen Waddle ahead at this point if you're freaked out about the Skylar Thompson thing.
Yeah, what I always tell people is I'm totally willing to look the other way if you want to if you want to play Shaheed over Waddle. I get it. I absolutely get it. Like we are definitely getting some, they're going to take some shots with Shaheed, and I don't know that that's going to be there with Waddle.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk through the three matchups that Andy says deserve your attention in week three. All right, Andy, we're back. Let's get into the first game here. Lions at Cardinals. The Nate Tice Arizona Cardinals are flying high after week two, whereas the Lions, I think are a little bit of an underwhelming offense so far. So how do we see this game playing out? What are we looking at specifically? Let's start on the Lions side of the ball.
It will not shock you that the thing that I am paying the most attention to on the line side is Sam Laporta, right? Like, this has been And I have no doubt that you have already talked him to death. He's probably coming up in some Panic Meter listener feedback. I bet that name
I think
is
we have
popping.
Talked about Sam LaPorte on every his name has at least come up, I think, on every episode of the pod this week, I think.
Totally get it. The one thing that I will say in Sam's defense he's actually run. He's run the most routes of any tight end in the league. So, like, does he have opportunities in that, you know, he is every time there's a drop back, Sam LaPorte is running a route. He's not pass blocking. He's run the most routes in the league. Where he's lining up on the field, it looks exactly like last year. He's, you know, significant percentage out wide in the slot, like he's mixing it up. Their deployment of him looks exactly like it did last season. He's just not getting the ball. They've turned my boy into Cade Otton, Matt. That's what they've done.
Oh, no.
that's what this feels like. I need that to get better. And it's not just, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how, man, the Jameson Williams effect is really getting him. It's a little bit of Jahmyr Gibbs too, because whatever, it's two games, but Jahmyr Gibbs is on pace. Like it's two games. I don't want to play the on pace game necessarily, but if we did, he's on pace for 93 catches, right? Like they are throwing the ball to Gibbs. They are throwing the ball to Jameson, which was obviously not the case last year. He's more of a gimmicky guy. So they have other answers in the offense and they are electing to go with those. And it does now feel like Sam LaPorte, instead of being somebody whose weekly floor was like, you know, your worst Sam LaPorte games last year were still four catches, 50 yards. Maybe he got a shot in the red zone inside the 10. Now your floor games for Sam look like they're going to be like 2 for 20. And maybe there's only three or four big weeks. I hope that's not the case. But if we have another couple of quiet weeks, I'm going to be resigned to the fact that that's probably where we're headed.
You know, to stick with the Iowa tight end theme, I really liked Sal's comparison of he's kind of like George Kittle now at this point, where, you know, the big weeks are there. They're coming. Yeah. They will come at some point. But now, yeah, that weekly floor has come down quite a bit. He's still a top five tight end, I think, rest of season. He's going to get there in certain matchups. But, yeah, that's the big question. And now this week against the Cardinals, and I think as we're talking through the Lions offense here, as excited as we are about the Cardinals offense, that Cardinals defense is not so great. And it's really hard to take almost anything away from, I think, any matchup with the LA Rams at this point, because they're just they're like everybody's fantasy team. It's week three and they're out of players. Okay. So I don't really know what to take from that. But, you know, for the most part, I think this is probably a defense that we're going to want to attack this year. Is this the week that, you know, Ben Johnson and Jared Goff, I've talked about this on the pod, you know, they get in the film room and they look at this and they say, okay, target distribution wise, we've thrown a lot to Jameson Williams. It's for the most part been a positive thing, but let's get back to our bread and butter, which is, you know, let's get Sam some targets underneath. I don't know, because I think they're going to be able to have a good pocket, clean pocket, and push it downfield against the Cardinals. So I'm not 100% sure. We're obviously starting LaPorte. We're pretty much starting everybody on this offense, but that's obviously the big question in this game. So let's move it to the other side of the ball. Arizona Cardinals, what are you looking at here?
First thing I'll say is, man, like upon actually like watching the full game, Kyler was so good last week.
Awesome.
And it was the Rams. It was the Rams, a low degree of difficulty matchup, and credit to the Cardinals for immediately recognizing, hey, you have an Aaron Donald sized hole in your defensive front, and we're just going to throw James Conner into it and see what happens. And that went well. Conner was great. Kyler Murray was so good. And every question that I might have had coming out of week one, where they didn't go with the ball, where they did go with the ball, is it going to look like that going forward? Man, he was so good on vertical shots. Marvin Harrison obviously broke out. I think he might have been 5 for 5, like on balls that traveled more than 20 yards downfield.
Yep.
Like, it was great. Everything deep was good. Everything to the perimeter receivers was great. He continues to, even though he's not like proactively rushing, when he does it, it's so helpful to the offense and it's been so efficient. Like early in that game, not that the Rams were putting heat on him all day necessarily, but he was in on a first down. He's in a situation in which, I don't know, 28, 30 of the NFL's starting quarterbacks are definitely taking a sack there. And he like coolly scampers out of it, gets him to second and four instead of like second and 14, right? Like he was just so good the whole game, not just on his pass attempts, but just as a manager as well. Really impressive. Also, it was the Rams, and we should, you know, whatever. But that is what you should do against the Rams. You should be perfect against them, and I thought he was. It was just a really, really impressive game. Huge sigh of relief if you've got Harrison Jr. on a roster. He was great, and they didn't need to keep going to him necessarily, but he was super impressive. And now doing it against Detroit is going to be a different matter because they have, you know, they have real players that's a little disrespectful to the Rams, but they have a lot of talent at different levels of the defense. So I think it's going to be a bigger challenge, but I was so impressed by Kyler last week.
Yeah, and the Lions defense, I projected to be a much improved unit. I think they are a much improved unit so far this year. So this game certainly looks like it has shootout potential, probably one of the better fantasy environments on the week three slate. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm interested to see just how this defense matches up here. You know, from a matchups perspective, obviously the Lions have been super generous to slot receivers. If you're really in a tough spot, potentially you could look at Greg Dortch here. You know, I also think Michael Wilson has played well. You probably got to be in a pretty tough spot to play either of those guys, but Wilson has played more in the slot than Harrison, which is to be expected, just based on how they used Wilson as a rookie and how Harrison Jr. profiles as a player. So, like I said, got to be pretty desperate to play either of those guys, but they would be the sleepers, I guess, in this matchup.
Hey, listen, I've got some rosters where I'm waving Greg Dortch onto him. Come on, get in this lineup, pal.
Oh, boy, what a life to live. Okay, let's move on to the next game here. Eagles at Saints, the red hot New Orleans Saints. Let's put a pin in them for a second. What are we looking at when the Eagles have the ball here?
Well, shoot, feels like the Eagles suddenly need this one, right? I mean, they don't. They're 1-1, but coming off a puzzling loss, probably without AJ Brown, I guess, on the Eagles side. Like, yeah, the Eagles are kind of a you know, fantasy wise, they have players who just sort of set themselves in your lineup. Obviously, you're not worried about Jalen Hurts specifically. Devontae Smith looks great. Saquon, obviously, the drop was crushing, but other than that, he's been great this year. So we don't have to really worry about these guys. But I'm anxious to see them try to keep pace with whatever New Orleans is about to throw at them. But they, you know, without AJ Brown, and presumably they're not going to have him. I think he's doubtful now. I think he's basically suggested that he's going to miss another week. So, without him, like, I don't know, that Britton Covey is not doing a good AJ Brown impression. There's nobody else who's anything like AJ Brown on that roster. So I don't know that they're going to have answers, the Saints have just been so good, so fun to watch. And it's, you know, I probably shouldn't expect them to put another 40 on another team, but it does not seem like, especially the way Carr was playing last week, it's going to be hard to keep them under 28, 31, something like that.
Well, and I think what's gotten lost in the Saints season, because we're all so flabbergasted by the offense, is that the defense is still number two in EPA per play, number two in success rate. I get that one of them was against Bryce Young and the Panthers, but they played a good game against the Cowboys, I thought, as well, too. You know, they're still that is just a side of the ball that Dennis Allen is always going to have well coached. I think Chase Young has had some really electric moments this year with the Saints that, again, this has all kind of gone under the radar because the offense has been so good. So this is not some cakewalk game for the Eagles. And you're right that at this point, you know, we're playing Devonta Smith, we're playing Jalen Hurts, we're playing Saquon Barkley, even Dallas Goedert. I don't even know how much you got better options at tight end. That's great for you. Most people don't. So I don't know. Beyond that, there's not a lot more to, you know, pick from here. I think it's more of just, like, again, table setting expectations for this offense for the rest of the year. So let's talk about the Saints here, Andy. The Saints, man. I mean, obviously, it's been one of the stories of the season. We did a full breakdown yesterday on it in the fantasy film room. What are your thoughts about this particular offense this week?
Two things have really stuck out. One, we've already talked about Rashid Shaheed a little bit and his impressive season. It's not like the Saints are suddenly the one team that doesn't care about your too high look. They're just gonna run Shaheed past it, and Derek Carr is gonna going to heave an outrageous ball to him, and they're going to get 70-yard touchdowns. But the other thing I liked in the Cowboys game is the way they sort of, you know, maybe setting it up is a little bit strong, but they gave Shahid like a couple of like quick crossers. So you had to think about him as more than just a, you know, he's not just running go routes. Like we're going to treat Shahid as a real receiver. And it obviously that frees up so much for him, and it makes you as a defense now suddenly you have to guard, you know, you have to worry about 60 yards downfield, which just makes everything so easy for the offense. And the other thing that I think is notable, and I, you know, whatever, it's 2 weeks, maybe it doesn't tell a full story, but I kind of think it's the way things are going to go moving forward, is that Alvin Kamara currently leads all NFL backs in carries inside the 10-yard line. He's got 6 carries inside the 10. I think he's got 4 touchdowns that are inside the 12-yard line. Taysom Hill doesn't have a red zone touch. And I know he got banged up a little bit last week, but what if the Saints have finally said, hey, we're just going to give the ball to our best player when we're near the goal line.
Like, yeah, and they've said enough already, Andy. They've said enough already with the Taysom Hill stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is the setup for Alvin Kamara to be the RB1, right? Like, where last week isn't just a fluke, where last week is really indicative of how they're going to play it. Again, not that they're going to be a 40-point team every week, but, man, if Taysom Hill is just sort of a gimmicky guy that they only show us now and again, and when they actually get inside the 5 in goal to go situations, if they're just like, you know, it's like years ago when the Chiefs decided, oh, hey, Jamaal Charles is actually maybe the best back in the league. Maybe we should just lean on him at the goal line. And he became an absolute superstar. This is a little late in the career for that to happen for Alvin Kamara, but it might be happening right now. And if they just continue to feel like, if he gets David Montgomery type usage inside the 10, it's going to be a phenomenal season.
Yeah. And, you know, the Eagles got barreled over by the Falcons run game on Monday Night Football last week. And from a scheme standpoint, obviously we broke down the Saints and how they're doing all these outside zone runs. The Falcons, Bijan Robinson has 81.3% of his carries on zone runs this year. So this is a very similar type of matchup here. Kamara expectations should be very high. I love that call of, like, if this continues, he could potentially be the RB1 at, you know, and just totally giving a middle finger to the age cliff or whatever. That's pretty electric to think about.
Yeah.
And yeah, at some point we're going to get like a normal game script from the Saints. I think it could be this week. So I've already said that Chris Olave is scoring a touchdown this week. I think that Rashid Shaheed should be in your fantasy lineups. And, you know, like they just have so many answers right now, whether they can throw screens to Kamara, they can throw bombs to Shahid, they can throw big overs to Chris Olave. Like they right now are playing football like how you should play football in 2024 against these defenses and things like that. So, yes, I think there is sustainability here, and these guys should be players that you're playing in your fantasy lineups. Like I think we're going to get to a point where we're no longer asking questions about some of these Saints players on a weekly basis, which is wild to say, but I think it's probably where we're headed.
It is wild to say, and there, like, a little part of you is waiting for Derek Carr to turn back into a pumpkin, right? But like you know, so many of his issues over the years have been red zone issues, and you know, the plays that he doesn't make when they get inside the 10, and they're leaning on Kamara for that right now, and Derek Carr is making outrageously good throws on some of these deep strikes. I don't know if that continues necessarily, but it's he's been near perfect so far.
Well, I mean, hey, CJ Gardner-Johnson has been there's been a spotlight on him for good and bad reasons so far with his second stint with the Philadelphia Eagles. So he's given up some big plays to like Darnell Mooney and Jaden Reed, or at least been in the vicinity of big plays given. I'm not going to say it's his fault or, you know, maybe missed tackles, things like that. Against these two Saints receivers, that would be a pretty bad thing if he doesn't hold up in that middle of the defense there. Let's move on to the final game to highlight here, Andy Behrens. Ravens at Cowboys. What are we looking at when the Ravens have the ball?
The Ravens need this game. You were talking about Buffalo's upcoming, like, the schedule doesn't get easier for the Ravens. It's rough. And obviously an unexpected loss last week. this team's 0-2. And like, if you just look at the year-to-date stats of all the key pieces of the offense, you're like, well, this is fine. This is the year I expected. Might like another touchdown or two from Lamar Jackson, but whatever. He's having a fine year. Derrick Henry's scoring. He's doing the Derrick Henry thing. Zay Flowers having a really nice year, like the usage last week. I mean, but the difference with the Ravens this year, and we talked about it on Sunday, they're giving up 10 more points per game so far than they did all of last season. Patrick Queen is gone. The defensive coaching staff is now scattered across the NFL. So like, things are different and they're not stopping anybody. And they're not, you know, to this point anyway, the offense hasn't become this unstoppable juggernaut. Like, they're barely keeping pace with their defense. And now here they're 0-2 and they're facing a good team. This is just, you know, such an interesting game because it's two teams that came into the season thinking, oh man, we're Super Bowl contenders. And, neither one of them looks like it. And the Ravens could be in real trouble if they drop this one.
It could be in real trouble. And I think the biggest issue for Baltimore from an offensive perspective has been their late down passing performance has been atrocious this year. I mean, they have Lamar Jackson has 20 attempts on third and fourth down, which is the fifth most in the league. He's completed 12 passes, 5.95 yards per attempt, completion percentage over expectation of -5.7. And they're trying to push it on third and fourth down. He has a 10.1 average depth of target, which is the most of any quarterback that has 20 plus attempts on third and fourth down. So, and I think a lot of that is because they can't protect. That has been an issue. The offensive line, I wish, you know, talked about it a lot on like Football 301 and stuff. I was kind of like, you know, they'll figure it out. Then maybe they figure it out by the course of the season, but so far it's been an issue. And I that doesn't make me feel good when you're going into Dallas against a pissed off defense that got embarrassed last week and certainly has guys that can get after it up front.
Yeah. Now the flip side is like Dallas showed that they're vulnerable last week. Right. And the Ravens have playmakers who can take advantage of some of that. So it's not like I'm worried about the Ravens from a fantasy perspective. Exactly.
Right, yeah.
It's just shocking to see them in this situation. Shocking to see them coming off a loss to the Raiders and now kind of like, I don't know, again, it gets late early. Like they kind of need a win because the schedule doesn't get that friendly the following week. This is a really tough spot for them. But of course, we can imagine Zay Flowers having a huge game here and either of the tight ends or both of them having big games. There are clearly some downfield opportunities against the Cowboys. It should be a good Lamar game. I don't really worry about the Ravens from a fantasy perspective. But, you know, if you're a Ravens fan, man, your anxiety is extremely high.
Yeah, and I think your anxiety's still got to be a little bit high if you have Derrick Henry as your – I mean, the results have been there, obviously, but their run game hasn't particularly been efficient. Now, if they can – they should get rolling against the Cowboys here. If they don't get rolling against the Cowboys after what we've seen the first 2 weeks, then you got to be pretty alarmed. And certainly I think your anxiety levels are still a little – if you're invested in these tight ends in any ways, Andrews and Likely, you know, whatever happened in week one, that's one thing. They go back in week two, Andrews, 68% route participation – Isaiah Likely just under 45%. You know, they're still like, God, I mean, Nelson Aguilar's running around on 45% of the dropbacks. We don't need to be seeing that. Okay. So like, I just still have a lot of kind of self-discovery based questions about the Ravens offense, but you're right. From a fantasy perspective, they are a little bit of an, it is what it is team. And I think you could say the same thing about Dallas in this particular matchup, Andy.
Yeah, but disappointing results so far. I thought we'd get a better game from Dak last week. I thought, you know, what, it, and it, you know, the Saints just put up such a big number, and like those early drives for Dallas that just kind of stalled and ended with field goals, and then pretty soon it felt over because the Saints just simply would not stop. But like, man, is there anybody that we have to start here other than CeeDee Lamb? And I guess Dak. Dak is kind of, even Dak right now is kind of at that fringe, like QB10 through QB14 range for me, probably for everybody, right? Like he's not a surefire starter. Really impressed by the game that we got out of Tolbert. It doesn't seem like CeeDee Lamb's injury is going to be like any big thing for the weekend. Doesn't seem like it's going to impact him. So I wouldn't worry about, generally, I don't worry about people missing practices on Wednesdays. So no great stress there. But no easy answers in the run game for them. I like that we're getting Deuce Vaughn a little bit more involved, but he's not so involved that you have to care about it in fantasy. I don't know, but one, like, I, if Dallas loses, now you can feel a little bit better if you're a Ravens fan, but all of a sudden Dallas is probably in panic mode.
100%. Yeah, I like your call about Dak. He's our consensus QB 13 in Yahoo ranks. You're the highest. I'm actually the lowest. You're 12. I'm 14. Big deal. But he's definitely – it's always tough when we're talking about quarterbacks in this range because it's like, okay, if you drafted Dak, you don't really have Jared Goff or like Brock Purdy, but I like those guys better than Dak this week.
Yeah.
Maybe you picked up Derek Carr and like you want to start him, but it's a one spot difference for both of us, so really who cares? It's definitely going to be just – I'm with you that there really is – there's not a lot of questions about Dallas from a fantasy perspective, so we kind of know what we're getting here. Before we let you go, Andy, I know you have one honorable mention game you want to throw out here. Is it – please tell me it's not Bears-Colts, but what is it?
No. I'm trying to have a Bears-free day here if the world lets me. No, it's actually – I don't think we're going to get this matchup, but, man, if we were going to get another – like Matt LaFleur, Malik Willis collaboration in the Titans matchup. I just wanted to mention the game and the game plan that LaFleur put together again last week before we got out of here. Like it feels like Jordan Love is probably coming back. He practiced on Wednesday, which of course is a good sign. Actually, like just sitting down and watching that thing from start to finish, what an absolute wizard Matt LaFleur is. Like incredible. And I felt like, you know, obviously it was a run dominant game script, but like every run had a little bit of misdirection to it. And then, you know, four plays later, they give you the same look and they do something very different off of it. And like, I don't know how many actual looks they gave the defense in that game, but like every one of them had counters and variations that he was throwing at you, just pitched a shutout. And when they would have Willis throw, you know, it was in very advantageous situations. It'd be first down after we ran the ball down your throat seven times in a row, right? Like it was just such a good game plan, so well designed. And I hope people remember it. Like if the Packers end up in playoff position again this year, like I feel like it's a game that, like, if this had happened at the end of the year, it wins Matt LaFleur Coach of the Year, 100%. And I hope people look back and remember that game because it was wildly effective, really fun to watch. And, like, the kind of thing where, like, I don't know, if you're a coach at any level, you're, like, a high school coach and you run the wing T, you're a D3 coach, you've got a rec league team that plays flag football. Like there's something for you in that game plan. You should be stealing from it. It was so fun to watch. And it's crazy to say here in week three of the fantasy season, man, I'd love to see another week of Malik Willis in the Packers offense, but I really would. It was so fun to watch.
Well, Andy, when the Packers are in the Super Bowl this year and the Bears are picking third in the draft, I promise we'll talk about it again. If that makes you feel better, we'll talk about it again and we'll remember this game plan. But yeah, it sounds like we're going to get Jordan Love in this game. Don't immediately just like dial back up expectations for all these pass catchers. I think Jaden Reed comes back in the flex radar for sure. But this Titans defense has been good, man. And it's going to be Jordan Love that's been less. He's definitely going to be less than 100%. We just saw they can run the ball extremely effectively. So I think they will lean on that once again in this game. All right, Andy, shout out to you. Sorry for that mean joke at the end. We will see you again on Sunday after the dust settles. But for now, we're going to throw it to a quick break. And when we come back, Tara Roberts joins the show to share her make or break players for week three right after this. Now joining the show is the one and only Tara Roberts. Tara, what's going on?
Everything is wonderful. It's a happy week here. My boy Drake London finally had his breakout week. I guess can we consider it a breakout week? He had a not awful week. He was close enough, good enough for us. Jameson Williams target share was good again. So I'm a happy camper. It was a good fantasy week other than the injuries. That bums me out.
Yeah, that bums everybody out. And thank you, yes, for bringing some rosy positivity to this show after Andy Behrens came on in the first half and was just immediately crying about all of his fantasy problems. So that's why we have you here, Tara, to be the arbiter of positivity or at times maybe to set expectations where they need to be when some of these we're talking about these volatile players here heading into each and every week, which is that's what you do in this segment, the make or break players. Again, this is not a strict like start sit sort of thing, but we're just kind of discussing the outlooks for some players that people might be considering for that final spot in their lineup. So let's jump right into this and talk Zach Moss of the Cincinnati Bengals.
Heading into the season, I didn't think that I would be talking about Zach Moss. I expected this to be a more evenly split backfield, but to his credit, Zach Moss has kind of taken over as the lead back here. It's been a little bit disappointing in terms of the production. He's the winner, but technically speaking, from a fantasy perspective, he hasn't really technically been a winner for us yet, but I'm thinking that finally, here in week three, we can get that from him. Again, week one, volume was a little bit underwhelming, under 50 yards, 9 carries, but he did get a touchdown, kind of saved him there. Week two, similar story, only 34 rushing yards there, 1 reception, 5 fantasy points, very ugly. But the thing is here is that he's out touching Chase Brown significantly here. So he is the RB1. It's just that we need this kind of excellent matchup for him to finally have that breakout opportunity there. And this is the week for it to happen. The Washington defense, it's literally a cure-all for anyone and everyone. Quarterbacks, running backs, you name it. Daniel Jones, everybody. Devin Singletary averaged 5.94 yards per carry against Washington last week and scored a touchdown. So it's got to be Zach Moss's time here. I lean more aggressively to the make here. I've been a little bit worried about him and the volume there and the Cincinnati's offensive production as a whole. But the bounce back last week was good, and I think the run game is finally going to get involved here.
Yeah, over 80% of the snaps last week. You wonder if that's maybe game script dependent because he's the clearly more trusted option overall, but certainly more trusted in pass protection. I think that's the big reason that they brought Zach Moss in here. I would not be taking any victory laps about any Cincinnati Bengals running backs at this point because this is a situation that I think will change by the end of the season. I definitely landed on more Chase Brown teams than Zach Moss teams, but I have a little bit of both. I think they were both overall good draft picks from a process standpoint. And yeah, like you said, the indicators, the peripherals have been there for Zach Moss, but the results haven't necessarily been there. If that holds up through the first, few weeks of the season, I think maybe they will get Chase Brown more involved. But for now, I love your call about him being this is the weak type of player here at home against a bad Commanders team. I think they're the worst defense in the league. They're certainly the worst secondary in the league. So points will be scored. Zach Moss has a pretty good shot to find his way into the end zone on Monday night. Let's move on to your next player here, DeMarcus Robinson, of what's left of the LA Rams.
Yeah, this one is a lot more ambiguous for me because in my spirit, in my heart, I truly want to believe in a Rams receiver and that somebody is going to be usable because it's the Rams. Somebody always steps up and gets volume there. But at the same time, it's just really, really difficult to trust anyone in this offense now, in particular because it's just not the same offense. I'm very pro DeMarcus Robinson. I was very pro, great late round draft pick for him. Believed in the volume that he saw. Clearly the solid wide receiver 3 here. But the problem here with him is that now stepping into this, I guess wide receiver 1 role technically for the Rams, the Rams offense as a whole is just very broken. And it's difficult to trust anyone other than Kyren Williams based off pure volume there. So when we're looking at DeMarcus Robinson, yeah, he's going to be the wide receiver 1 and the most talented in that receiving core theoretically, but I worry about if Matt Stafford's even going to have the time to get the ball to him. The injuries to the offensive line are a major problem, so it's not that I don't believe in DeMarcus Robinson. There's just a lot of issues going on with everything around him in this Rams offense that makes me very skeptical here. On the other end, you kind of look at this matchup, but it's not really that bad of a matchup, really. Mm-hmm. We saw Alan Lazard go off in week 1 against this defense. We saw, obviously, Justin Jefferson do well. Even Jalen Naylor stepped up last week. So you kind of wonder, he's right in that borderline flex opportunity, and it's just a matter of risk and whether or not you actually need to dip into your bench because you've got massive injuries and you need to take a high upside swing and think that DeMarcus Robinson is that guy. He's so borderline for me. I kind of lean more towards the break on him just because I don't want to take that risk of this offense just being a complete mess. But like, are you trusting anyone in this Rams offense other than Kyren Williams?
no. I'm not even really trusting Kyren Williams. I mean, he's a guy you're going to have to play because of where you drafted him, your other options, the snap counts, things like that. But the Rams are like, they have an 18.5 implied point total this week. Yes, I think if somebody's getting in on that 18.5 points, it will be Kyren Williams. I think the favorite to score a touchdown in the receiving department would be DeMarcus Robinson. But I'm looking at our kind of consensus ranks right now at Yahoo. He's 41, 35, 34, 39. Like, that's in terms of receivers, that's where he's at. It's very, he's a perfect candidate for this because it's very make or break. And I think it will likely be touchdown dependent. At least, Tara, I think if you're telling yourself a story of why you're going to have to start DeMarcus Robinson, it does come back to trust with Matthew Stafford and the baked in both role and chemistry that he likely has with Stafford. But he also is the farthest, he's the perimeter receiver on this team.
Yeah.
He's likely going to draw the most difficult matchup with Ward out there as the cornerback. So I kind of come down on, if you got to do it, you got to do it, but hopefully you got some better options in this one.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's move on to your next player. And I'm actually very curious where you're going to come down on Brian Thomas Jr. from a make or break perspective, because I'm very curious if we feel the same way this week.
Yeah, this one is maybe kind of like we'll keep this one kind of as a mystery because we've talked about him before. He was one of my makes in week one. And I like what I've seen out of him. I see him clearly stepping up as the wide receiver one in this offense. He's done enough to show me that he warrants a flex consideration on a weekly basis, averaging double-digit fantasy points, wide receiver 25 and half PPR. He's stepping up and being that third most productive rookie. So in terms of him and his overall progress this season, I'm feeling super positive about it. But when I'm looking at him in week three in particular, I'm not feeling so great about it. Matchup against Buffalo, not so good. And on top of that, we've got this problem of where visually he is clearly the wide receiver one for me. When I look at him, I see as we progress through the season and as Trevor Lawrence, you know, hopefully cross our fingers, produces more pass volume, it'll be funneling towards him. But then when you kind of look at the metrics and the targets and everything, he's not getting a massive target share. Everything is very spread out evenly between him and Christian Kirk and Gabe Davis. Gabe Davis has the most targets. He's on the field the most. So do I want to take that risk of him getting another, you know, four target game and saying he's got to get the touchdown or a couple big plays in order to get there and make him valuable in that flex spot for me? I want to, but I lean away towards it this week because I feel like he's in a range where they're just a lot of options in better matchups. So he's more of a break for me this week. And I feel bad about it because he's solidly kind of in there. Like, I've got him ranked up there to where he's perfectly in a flex spot. You can go there if you have to, but given the matchup, I tend to lean away from it this week.
Yeah. There's a lot of interesting things to consider here with this one. And I don't know if it's just because, you know, there's so much discourse right now about too high defenses and, you know, the conversation that Nate Tyson and I had yesterday on the Fantasy Film Room about how you like beat modern defenses and things like that. And there's my thoughts on that are sort of intersecting with my thoughts on Brian Robinson and how he's played in Jacksonville so far, because I agree with you. Number one, he's looked great. I think he's exceeded my expectations in terms of how seasoned he was to be an immediate contributor to this offense. That's the first part of it. The second part of it is how he has been used, which Trevor Lawrence right now leads all quarterbacks in deep throw percentage. He has been willing to push it down the middle of the field. And why that's important is because the Bills, again, to bring it back to this too high cover two stuff, they play cover two at the second highest rate in the NFL right now. And Trevor Lawrence has been one of the rare quarterbacks so far this year who is willing to push it down the middle of the field, because that's how we're talking about, cover two, taking away these deep passes and stuff like that. But there's a section of the field, if you're willing to throw deep overs and deep posts, if you can split those safeties, think about our boy Rashid Shaheed, like splitting those middle of field safeties on these big post routes and deep overs. The Jaguars have thrown those routes to Brian Thomas Jr. so far. So those throws should be available on Sunday, which is why I think he makes a perfect candidate for make or break here, because you catch a couple of those passes. Shoot, you catch maybe one of those passes, you're make. You don't, you're break. That's why he's like perfectly volatile this week.
Completely agree. It could go either way. I do have in a deep league, I am using him. But if you're not in a position where you absolutely have to put him in there, you're right. It's dependent on how they attack this defense. Trevor Lawrence throwing the deep ball. And at least we know that Brian Thomas is that guy. There's no ambiguity in his role. So that makes it a little bit more comfortable. It's just the level of trust we can put in Trevor at this point.
If we're talking about scales here with make or break, I'm leaning a little bit more to make than break. Looking to play Brian Thomas, I'm feeling a little bit more, not all the way make, but like a little bit more positive towards that side of it here. You know, it's not been positive so far. The experience of having Amari Cooper on your fantasy football team. He is definitely someone that hasn't really made it into the people's panic meter discussion yet, which I'm kind of surprised by because it just, again, it has not been great so far from a efficiency perspective. So Tara, what are you telling people about Amari Cooper this week?
Yeah, Amari Cooper making the make or break list here. I guess as we get like deeper into the season, I feel like we start to get these bigger names that will run in here and we start to consider like, okay, am I at a point now where I can't take that risk anymore with Amari Cooper? And I feel like week three is one of those weeks because looking at him, like, you've always taken the volatility with Amari Cooper. It's part of his game. It is what it is. You draft him and you know that on a weekly basis, you're going to get a dud week every now and then. But this start off multiple dud weeks in a row, this is well below even his standards. Like, this is shockingly bad. And I don't obviously feel like it's his fault. A lot of that is tied to Deshaun Watson and his struggles. We also have increased involvement from Jerry Jeudy and Elijah Moore that are kind of, you know, not really stepping up massive, but doing just enough to kind of make this just very irritating for Amari Cooper, who has always been the dominating force within that offense since he's been there. So I feel like we've transitioned to this point where Amari Cooper, where we're having to say, okay, I am considering him someone who I am willing to bench this week, unfortunately. And I hate to say that because it is an excellent matchup. And that kind of presents the problem of, hey, like I feel like in theory, they should be able to jump on the Giants. Now, the Giants' defense is not a complete disaster. It's not a Washington situation where we know 100%. It's not Washington, Carolina. We know that we can exploit these defenses. They're not that desolate. But we feel like the Browns should be able to exploit this defense. But I just don't have that confidence, unfortunately, in Deshaun Watson. I'm starting to get a little bit worried. If you've got injuries across the league, yeah, you're going to have to start him. It's Amari Cooper. You're going to have to put him in your lineup. But if you have the luxury of pivoting to another option, I'm willing to do so until Deshaun Watson shows us some level of competent play here to support Amari Cooper.
Yeah, 17 targets, 5 catches so far this year for Amari Cooper. And the worst part is, Terry, he leads all pass catchers and routes run with 86 right now. I think there's a couple things going on here. One, Cooper has dropped some passes this year. That's certainly, he's dropped 3 passes so far this year. That's a part of it. The second thing is that this is what the Browns want to do, is be a more spread and shred team with Deshaun Watson than they want to be that under center play action, more condensed offense than we've seen, that we know is Kevin Stefanski wants to run, certainly what we saw with Joe Flacco at the end of last year. That's the first thing. And because of that, it's spread, like this target distribution is much more spread out. 21.5% of the targets for Amari Cooper, 16.5% for Elijah Moore, 17.7% for Jerry Jeudy. I mean, shoot, David Njoku isn't even involved in this offense because he's hurt. So that's what's made Cooper more of that, instead of locked in wide receiver 2, more of that boom bust wide receiver 3, I think, than that we're used to. Now, obviously, for the long term, I don't feel like Cooper's going to have his weeks. I don't know if this is one of those weeks, especially because of the matchup, like you said. But I, like, put it to people this way. I have him on a roster where I also have Brandon Ayuk, Nico Collins, and George Pickens. And like, he's not making that roster this week. I'm going to play George Pickens over him as my wide receiver 3 this week, because I think he's another guy that the box score results haven't been there, but I think the play has been better. That's how I'm thinking about Cooper this week. Like, yes, there are probably spots where he's your best option at receiver 3. And look, eventually all those targets and opportunities going to turn into production. But my confidence level is definitely very shaken.
Yeah. The confidence level low on this one. Again, It's just, it doesn't feel like Deshaun Watson has the capabilities right now to utilize Amari Cooper properly. He's only averaging 4.5 yards per attempt. That is shockingly, dreadfully low. The completion percentage is a hot mess. You talk about the drops for Amari Cooper, so you combine that. So you've got a 58 completion percentage, a 33% catch rate. It's just like literally the worst combination ever. So they've got to find it and pull it together. I'm just going to pivot, and well, if I had any shares, I would. So I'm advising anyone that has shares, just pivot for right now and pause on that. If you miss out on the boom week, you know, it happens, but you don't want to take that risk of getting another sub-5 fantasy point day from him.
All right, hit me with your thoughts on Bucky Irving, next player on your list here, who obviously his backfield mate is dealing with a little bit of an injury right now.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to include this one. He's not in my make or break column this week just because of the injury factor there, but just advising people to keep your eye on this backfield, because if we get word that even if Rashad White is just maybe going to be limited or if he's out completely, the way that Bucky Irving will shoot up in my rankings is unreal. Again, when we look at him, he's looked strong in this offense comparatively, and I like Rashad White, but when you look at the two of them and compare, and obviously statistics, you can't do like a one-for-one because they're in different situations throughout the game, but we have consistently seen this problem with Rashad White, yards per carry. He just hasn't been a very efficient running back, and Bucky Irving has gotten in there and shown a little pop and a little bit of upside. And we talk about him, and if he has the opportunity to get even 50% of the workload in this matchup, this excellent matchup against a Denver defense that obviously is just typically shredded by running backs week after week after week, I would absolutely move him up and make him a very, very flex-worthy option this week.
All right, we started with a Bengals player. We're going to come all the way back around and finish with a Bengals player. Tight end Mike Gesicki coming off a 90-plus yard game.
Yeah, I kind of love this one here because I feel like it's the perfect meshing of two worlds. Mike Gesicki, the guy that we have wanted to come back into relevancy ever since he kind of got pushed to the side in Miami's offense when he didn't really fit the scheme, and the Cincinnati Bengals, who we have wanted for years, just some tight end to emerge. Can some tight end for Joe Burrow step up and give us fantasy value on a consistent basis? And maybe we finally found the perfect match of Mike Gesicki in this offense with Joe Burrow. It seems to be clicking here. Week one, he had decent production, would have been a lot better if he hadn't have dropped that touchdown pass. Week two, strong production coming off of that big game. Generally, looking at his usage in this offense, it just looks like he has a very specific and usable role here. And maybe that changes when T. Higgins comes back. But him returning to practice and trusting T. Higgins coming back off of a hamstring injury and going to make a significant contribution in a first start if he does start, I'm not trusting it. I'm more than willing to roll out Mike Gesicki again until we get that confirmation that T. Higgins is a 100% full go. Since I don't think it's going to be this week, I am rolling with Mike Gesicki as a solid, solid streaming option at tight end this week.
I love that. Did you know that Mike Gesicki leads the Bengals in first read target share? 25% of the team's first read targets, which obviously... Look, you know, T. Higgins not being in there, it is a big deal. You know, Ja'Marr Chase not being fully integrated all offseason, that's a part of this too. But yeah, they found a legit role for him. He's primarily their slot receiver. He's run 59.5% of his routes from the slot, which against this Washington Commander secondary is super viable. So I love this. If you're hurting for a tight end, you know, this it could be the week for Mike Gesicki to continue that production. I found him to be like an interesting signing by this team. So and the Bengals, I think at this point need some counter punches. You know, I've said that all week that like seeing Gesicki show up, seeing Jermaine Burton pop for a big catch, you know, Andre Yoshivas get a couple touchdowns. Like that's what this team needs. They need more options. They need Zach Moss, one of these running backs, to step up too. So the September Bengals are always frustrating, but you know, it's never frustrating, Tara. It's given out a couple of high-value flex plays for this week. So on that note, let's toss to our keys to winning presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And for week three, as it always is, our key to winning is picking you guys that are going to make the difference in your flex spots. We need you to win this week. So, Tara, We talk about these frustrating players, some of these volatile guys in the flex. Your player is kind of the poster child of maybe some volatility, but maybe not so much anymore. Hit me on Saints receiver Rashid Shaheed.
Yeah, you talked about him before. We love Rashid Shaheed and the boom bust upside that he brings on a weekly basis. We've had two boom weeks in a row here, two straight weeks of 15 or more fantasy points, two straight weeks of a touchdown here. And we've never had that before. Are we going to get three straight weeks of Rashid Shaheed boom games? I'm betting on it. I am. Because we're looking at this and it's new year, new Rashid Shaheed. We might be actually looking at him in just a brand new role in this offense where Derek Carr is thriving across the board. He's able to hit that deep ball. We're seeing it flowing and it's going straight to Rashid Shaheed. And this week's matchup against the Eagles screams a Rashid Shaheed boom week. Matt, I don't know if you've seen the memes online about CJ Gardner-Johnson. But
brought it up earlier in the show with Andy, actually. Yeah. Yep.
I feel like Shaheed is going to give us another meme this week. So we are going with Rashid Shaheed in our flex spot here.
I love that call. The Saints have been one of my favorite offenses to watch this season. So I'll go from one of my favorite offenses to one of my former co-hosts in Austin Eckler. Yeah, Eckler has not been a big-time fantasy contributor this year from a points perspective. However, he's been involved from the receiving perspective. The run game has actually been very efficient in Washington, which is a transition from Cliff Kingsbury's Arizona Cardinals days. Like they haven't always been the most consistent pass game, the best designed pass game, but they've always designed a really good run game. So that's carried over here to Washington. Brian Robinson is crushing it. Austin's been kind of like a nice change of pace. This is the matchup, though, if you need help at running back where you want to chase that secondary running back here. The Bengals are one of the worst run defenses in the NFL. We saw the Patriots just barrel over them in week one. They're 28th in rushing success rate allowed, and that's including a matchup last week where they faced the Chiefs, who lost their starting running back, Isaiah Pacheco, in the game. So, yeah, it's a bit of a razor-thin margin for error. We're talking about these volatile players here, but I can certainly see Eckler being involved in the receiving game in negative game script because I think the Bengals will win this game at home in their building. So Washington chasing points, Eckler catching passes. The run game has been efficient. I think Eckler's looked good this year. Rooting for my guy here to have a big week number three. And let's manifest it. Let's make it happen, especially for all those teams, Tara, that have injuries. So that is going to do it for us today. Tara, shout out to you. Appreciate it. I wish you the best of luck in week three with all of the fantasy injuries we're all dealing with.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
Hey, we're all going to need it. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you hear from us, I actually will not be here for the week three Sunday recap. You know, I talked about the situation with my family and my mother-in-law a few, like about a month ago on the show, and everyone knows that the funeral is actually this weekend on Sunday. So we'll not be back for the show. We'll not be back for that show or Monday's show. So I appreciate you all. I will be back and locked in on the Data Dump show with Sal Vetri. But for now, Scott Pianowski is going to step into the host chair. The long-awaited return of the great Scott Pianowski, the prodigal son, has come home. He's leaving his newsletter. Well, he's going to be doing the newsletter, but he's going to leave the newsletter, the tower, and come down here with us peasants on the podcast. So he's going to step into the host chair for me. Really appreciate him and Andy Behrens holding it down. So you guys can hear them on Sunday. Until then, we're out.